Hey everyone, Jody here. We recorded this show last night, Friday night in Chicago. Now, a couple notes before we start. We had some audio difficulties with the recording, so it sounds a little wonky, but we think it's a worthwhile conversation and hopefully you feel that way too. And a heads up, this episode contains a fair amount of strong language, mature topics, and profanity. Okay, let's take a listen. Claire, you missed a pretty great river cruise today, architectural river cruise.
Ooh, tell me more.
Our docent, Peggy, recognized Nate and Harry, and she is in the audience tonight and gave us a shout-out, a very confusing shout-out to everyone else on the boat, but we appreciate it. And Nate, you used to live in Chicago, but you were feeling that cruise?
It's kind of weird being back. I mean, I lived here from when I was 18, went to college at University of Chicago.
Certain kind of crowd.
But when you're 18 to when you're 30, and when you move from somewhere, at first when you go back, it's kind of weird, right? It's kind of like, you know, you feel a combination of guilt, but also like, I decided to leave this place and all these things, and now it's been 7 years, and I love coming back here now, but it brings back a whole flood and rush of my growing up, basically.
Beautiful.
So, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I won't get too cheesy.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Let's do this. Welcome to Game 1 of the Cubs versus Giants National League Divisional Series. No. I'm sorry. Let me redo that. Welcome to Kanye West's first concert back in Chicago after a possibly fake jewelry heist. No, for real. Welcome to the 5:30 Elections Podcast. My name is Jody Avergan, and we are here in Chicago, a city that we have spent the last several weeks talking shit about on the podcast. But it is one of the best cities in America, and seems to be having one of the funnest weekends in America. Cubs game, Kanye West concert, the marathon is this weekend. So thanks to all of you for coming out to, at best, the fourth funnest thing happening in Chicago this weekend. But we are here in Chicago, and welcome to this amazing crowd. We're here, as we get together almost every week to do, to talk about the election, and there's some stuff to talk about. Our group, as always, Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. Hello, Nate.
Hiya.
Politics reporter Claire Malone.
Hi, Claire.
You can skip over me.
And we decided to invite him, whiz kid Harry Enten. Hello, Harry.
Jody.
We are really thrilled to be here at the beautiful Athenaeum Theater. We're pretty close to Wrigley. The game is just starting, so we're going to try and have people out by maybe the sixth inning or so, depending. If it's a pitcher's duel,
it's
maybe
a pitcher's duel, so.
So maybe it'll be the seventh inning. We'll see. We'll try and get you out of here. On tonight's show, we're going to preview Sunday's debate, the second debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. We'll also use that as a chance to talk about some of the latest news and how it may affect the race. We'll also do a segment I've been wanting to do for a while, which is who are the undecideds? Who are the undecided voters? We'll try and get our heads around undecided voters in this year's election and the role of undecided voters in general. We'll do the latest round of Harry versus Nate obscure election trivia. Yeah, crowd favorite.
And it's the best of five series, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
I'm ahead, so 2-1.
Is that right? Pitcher's duel.
Yeah.
And then we will take your questions. But first, a segment we like to do from time to time, one of our favorite questions that we like to ask, good use of polling or bad use of polling. Today's example comes from, you know what? Fuck this. These Donald Trump comments. Unbelievable. This is the only question I've written. You've got to be kidding me. Okay, so it is my job to provide context and recap. Like, I really actually I'm having...
It's actually not funny.
It is not funny, and I'm having, like, trouble... I had trouble copying and pasting this into my prep for tonight. But for anyone who's not up to speed, and again, I feel really just icky characterizing this on the show, but today the Washington Post this afternoon got its hands on a videotape from a 2005 taping of Access Hollywood, which featured Donald Trump and Billy Bush, last name Bush, heading to the set of a soap opera where Trump was going to make a guest appearance. And before Trump and Bush did their staged walking off of a tour bus, they were shooting the shit on the bus for a while, and that they had microphones on, so they were out of the view of cameras, but they had their mics were still rolling, and they say some awful, awful things about women, mostly Trump. And I think I have to read some of these, and then we'll discuss it. So Trump brags about making sexual advances towards a married woman, saying, "I moved on her. I did try and fuck her. She was married. I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married." Then he goes on to say, "You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful women. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the pussy." So, this happened this afternoon. What do we...
First of all, Donald Trump has no game, right? Like...
Trump's razor.
Second of all, I mean... On Twitter, and I'll use that phrase, people initially were saying, like, "Oh, Trump had only been married for 3 months. How could he be saying that? How could he be saying all these things and hitting on a married woman?" I mean, you know, go to the game tape, people. But I think the thing that we should, I mean, in all seriousness, the thing to take away from this, in my book, is the part where he's talking about, like, grabbing women's pussy and making them do anything you want, right? Like, that's... you know, someone on Twitter tweeted back to me, like, "Why is this more, like, repugnant than any other thing he said?" And I guess it's not on a sliding scale of racism, but I think there's something about the personalness of the violence that he's using in his words, right? It's almost like hand-to-hand combat. Like, he's talking about something that he would do to a woman. There are no Republicans that are going to defend this except for his boys.
Sean Hannity did.
Sean Hannity will defend it. Roger Ailes.
I'm not kidding.
I mean, Harry just read this off backstage that Paul Ryan just said that Trump isn't appearing at his...
Yeah.
So too touchy for James.
I want to talk about the political fallout, but I think we need to attend a little more to the awfulness of these comments first. So, you know, Nate, Harry, like, does this feel like... Of course he's this way. We've known this. He's an abhorrent person. Or is this somehow at another level?
I mean, on the one hand, I'm not surprised that Donald Trump said these things, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they're awful things to say, and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say, right? It's repugnant. And a lot of things he said and done are repugnant, and it's pretty rare that you have... one person who embodies so many of these repugnant characteristics.
That's the thing that's baffling to, or like just
mind blowing. And that he's one of
me.
The two major party nominees for president of the United States.
Like, he might be one of the worst people. That's the end of my sentence. And then he's a nominee.
Yeah. Well, it is just so far out of the norm. And also their apology. They're not, like, sort of non-apology that it was just locker room talk and, like, like was comically retrograde to the point of, I mean, like, you're not doing a good job as a political consultant. I mean, but I will say that, like, I do think perhaps for men of Donald Trump's age cohort, it's more of an okay thing to say. Like, I don't even think Billy Bush is worth the time here. Although I did find out tonight that he is a member of the Bush family.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I mean, but I do think...
Where was this Oppo research for Billy Bush back in early 2015?
I think the one thing that is striking is that... people used to talk like this, I think, probably more often. I mean, I'm not that old. But I think that there was more... You know, we've all watched Mad Men. There was, like, more of a culture of this before. And I think, I mean, the one thing that you can say now is sort of, like, I don't know... Like, ladies, if you heard your boyfriend saying that, like, that's a deal breaker. Like,
Yeah, go ahead, real quick, and then Harry can jump in.
I mean, it's not like he's having the best conversation, with his best friend, and then someone's eavesdropping, right? He's also using this as a way to brag, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's, to a TV host, yeah.
To a TV host, he doesn't really know all that well. It's not a totally private setting by any means at all.
I have a few thoughts.
I can imagine.
Number one, although it may surprise some of you based upon my dietary exercise, the way I eat, we'll put it that way, I was athletic once back in the day and was in many locker rooms, and I don't remember any conversation that occurred exactly like this. So to me, it is not locker room talk. I will further note that it is not the language of which he uses that I find to be so offensive. It is the actions of which he is describing. He is basically calling or saying that, you know, it's okay to sexually assault somebody. And I don't think that is okay. And number three, obviously, although I may sound like it at times, I am not of Donald Trump's age.
But a lot of people in the audience are surprised to learn that this evening upon seeing you in person. But yes.
Yeah, you guys can all stop tweeting those things where it's like, wow, you looked like that? I didn't expect that.
Didn't expect it. But my father was. Mm-hmm. And my father, at times, I would say he was not a creepy old man, but a sexy senior citizen. I never once heard anything remotely close to these comments. Not once. And I think we'd be giving him a pass by saying that men of a certain
age speak this way.
It is
my
not
father
true.
Is this age, and my father would never say that. Never. Not the least of which because he's the father of four daughters. And like, it's just an unacceptable thing to say.
If you're a decent human being, it's not something that you say. Yeah.
And the fact that we have to say this at this point is what is just baffling to me. So to that point, and advancing this kind of into the political ramifications, well, first, looking backwards, Nate, where was all this stuff throughout the Republican primary?
I mean, this is one of the great mysteries, right?
Game change 2016. We'll find out, I guess.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, a lot of people, including us, were surprised that Trump had so much staying power, but it wasn't like just happened all at once, right? He rose in the primaries in June and July. You had reason to be skeptical, or at least we did, until November or December. But this thing lasted until May, and it's shocking how few real bombshells, even kind of basic blocking and tackling stuff, really dropped on him. And I really don't know. I mean, it's really hard to explain. But he's a guy who was hitting 300 against AAA pitching, and now he's in the big leagues and with him.
Yeah. Claire, does this sink his campaign?
I think it's a pretty bad wound. I mean, if you're courting college-educated women in the suburbs, married women in the suburbs, they don't like their pussies grabbed either, you know? Like, I think it's... I think we've talked a lot about moments that are inflection points in the campaign, and we said the con controversy after the convention was one of those. This is definitely one. And I think it's much more one than the tax return thing, even though the tax return thing maybe speaks more to sort of, you know, what Democrats think of as, like, the ultimate hypocrisy of Donald Trump. Stuff like this just hits harder with people and makes people have more of a visceral character reaction to Trump.
You read our website earlier today.
And no one reads this.
No one reads the website. I don't. Nathaniel wrote a nice little piece, you know, essentially saying that before this moment ever happened, Clinton's odds of winning have continued to climb since the first debate. So this is basically adding water to a ship that was already taking on a lot of water. But, you know, I would point out that there are sometimes we in the media, right, take a moment and run with, oh, this is a game changer, you know, so on and so forth. One way that I feel like, you know, I almost feel like Tom Friedman here, you know, with the guy in my cab. But
stop yourself now.
My mom very rarely emails me anything political, anything. She may email me asking why I don't call her more, but she never emails me anything political. And within an hour of this breaking, she forwarded me this story.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, it's easier to make a call like this when his chances per our model were already only 20%, and we think our model actually is sort of conservative in some ways relative to other people's forecasts. But yeah, one tendency I've been annoyed by this year is that it's gone like full circle, where instead of like proclaiming lots of fake news to be a game changer, people are like, well, Hillary Clinton declared herself to be a space alien, but let's wait and see the effect on the polls. This is bad, and it comes at about the worst possible time for Trump, when you already had the prospect of his party abandoning him. And you saw just in the hour when we were backstage, Paul Ryan canceled this event. You had numerous GOP senators say this is unacceptable. Not that many said vote for Hillary, although John Huntsman said that you should have Trump drop out and have Pence run instead. So that's a pretty good indicator.
It feels like April.
It feels like April, but it's October, and so you can't recover from an April.
Okay, so this is a chance, I guess, to advance this forward and talk about the debate. But I just, but one thing is, this broke, so to speak, on the Washington Post website under David Fahrenthold, is that his last name? He's like responsible for the most lowbrow and highbrow Trump scare, because he's the guy who's been doing the Trump Foundation work.
Yeah.
It's just like remarkable that one reporter gets to have.
No, if he doesn't get
stories, or is, you know, he should get a dual Pulitzer.
Yeah.
He should get the Pulitzer and the like. Oh,
if he doesn't
like,
get that, it's
hell,
pure
Pulitzer.
Jealousy, right? The
What's
only
that?
Reason he won't get the Pulitzer is if it is pure unadulterated jealousy from his colleagues for being too good.
Nate Silver predicts it here first.
Okay. Is that in the model, Nate, the Pulitzer? Yes?
I was just going to quickly say that this to me feels like the start of something, because now we're starting to get other stories, Miss Utah, saying that Trump kissed her on the lips. The same thing, Erin Burnett reported one of her friends said something along the same lines, and this was just a few years ago. And not to mention there was the deleted tweet from Ashley Judd talking about her friend said something very much along the same lines of Trump. So I feel like this is just the beginning. It's not going to be pretty for the boy from New York. And he is a boy. He is not a man.
That's true. Okay, so let's talk about the debate. This, of course, is the state of the race as it stands right now.
2 hours ago, it's 80.7 now.
Is that right? Thank you, Nate. Sorry. Sorry, I screenshotted 2 whole hours ago. But, of course, this Sunday we have the second debate. We will see if Donald Trump can ride the winning momentum created by Mike Pence at the VP debate. This is where the model stands. In the last podcast, Nate, that we did after the VP debate, you said that this is perhaps sort of an unprecedented moment, this upcoming debate, where one of the candidates might basically be out of the running with a disastrous second debate performance. I'm guessing the candidate you're referring to is Donald Trump. Is that really what's at stake?
I mean, it feels like if the next 72 hours go badly for Trump, that, I mean, I don't know, right? Nothing's a certainty. But if he were to have as bad a debate as he had the first time and lost another 4 points, and the model's going into the 90s or something, right? There's got to be some impact from this hot mic thing. I mean, I don't know. It's not looking good for Trump at all. Isn't that obvious?
Yes. That's the Nate Silver analysis we have come to learn and
this
love.
Shows the probability. It doesn't show where we have the popular vote, which is Clinton about 5.5, right? And we assume the error distribution is roughly symmetrical. So Trump has a 20% chance of winning, but also Clinton has a 20% chance of winning by 11 points or more, right? I mean, this could really, really, really get away from Trump. It's kind of the GOP's worst-case scenario in the Senate, where you have a late-breaking race against Trump. They might just barely have time to distance themselves and to use this as a pretext to do it, right? But we'll see if we go from... I mean, everyone's going to denounce Trump. We'll see how many people say, I can't vote for this man, or even further, you have to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Claire, on the debate, Trump kind of had his troubles keeping his cool during the first debate. Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager, has kind of said that he's going to prep a little more and have it together for the second one. It's a town hall format. Sort of like this. There's awkward stools, and he has to like learn how to use his limbs in space.
Listen, I have a lot of sympathy for
that. Yeah, at this moment, I like would love to go reach for that water, but there's no way that's going to happen. What are you hearing, and what do you expect in terms of prep and lessons learned, if any, for this second debate for Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, lessons learned. I think his team has taken things away from the first debate, but it remains to be seen if Trump has taken things away from the first debate. So after the first debate, tons of people went anonymously to newspaper sources and were like, oh, whoa, like we told him that he should do something different, or like this was terrible. And, you know, some people have said, well, we're gonna prep him more for the next one. Trump, I think, came out the other day and said something like, I don't need practice pretending to be human, like, or acting human. Like, I can just, like, why do you, because the whole thing is, like, Clinton is working on her body awareness, how she looks to the cameras. And, like, you keep on thinking of, like, the 92 town hall with, there you go, Harry's checking his watch, with H.W. and Bill Clinton, who was, like, working his camera angles.
And is that's the one where Bill Clinton kind of knew that if he walked, like, to a certain, like, spot, there we go, that you want to demonstrate, where if he walked to a certain spot, then Bush would be in the background and would look kind of awkward throughout.
Right, and also Bush had sort of, like, completely flubbed the thing by asking the questioner to clarify her question, and Bill Clinton just kind of, like, took off and just spun it into gold, and it was just a very striking thing.
Harry, I want to ask you about some polling and voting blocks and so forth and real stuff, but on the content of this debate, Trump, you know, talked about how he didn't talk about Bill Clinton's infidelities. Do you think he was planning to bring it up, and now do you think that's off the table? Is there any scenario in which he brings that stuff up at this next debate?
Oh, who the hell knows?
Okay, that's the answer I was expecting. So now let me ask you a question about polling.
That's what Hannity did, right? That was Hannity's defense of Trump, and the extent they're, you know, bros and idiocy or whatever, that might be an indication of how Trump will be.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So looking, you know, we're looking at the shift here since the last debate. Are there any voting blocks or states that are reflected in the shifting polls that are now off the table for Trump? I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is the map that he's trying to now attack in the second debate, or is he basically trying to, like, play catch up to what he lost, to the ground he lost since the first debate, and then make a case beyond that?
Yeah, I would think, you know, this is not going to be a grand. If I were he, I would not try and hit a grand slam. I'd try and basically hit a double, maybe bring in a few runners. I would not try and bring it all the way back, or certainly make up the entire deficit. We do know from the past that second debates can move the numbers. If you look at, for instance, 1988 or 1992, those debates, in fact, did move the numbers a lot. The second debate in 2012 didn't as much. But, you know, right now, he obviously needs to win in a state like Florida. That is a must-win state for him if he is going to win this election. And he is trailing in pretty much all of the polls that have come out from that state, and especially the ones that are of higher quality, that call a live interview, you know, use live interviewers, that call the cell phones. There was the University of Northern Florida poll that had him down 3 in the state. State like North Carolina, also a must-win for him. He has trailed in all of the polls that have come out there since the first debate. And then, you know, I think you really get a good idea of how poorly he is doing since that first debate when a poll just was released from the state of Alaska. Alaska is a state that hasn't been carried by the Democratic nominee for president since 1964. He's only up 3 in Alaska. 3. Okay? So
by context, what did Romney?
They'll probably tweet out that poll later.
Right, of course, because they don't know what the hell they're doing on that Twitter.
Thank you, Alaska.
Romney lost in Alaska, I believe, by about 15 points. It might have been 14 if we're being exact.
Romney won Alaska.
No, Romney did not lose in Alaska. Romney may have lost some states and lost the election, but even he won in Alaska.
There were some reports today that Trump was, like, pulling out of a few key states. Is he starting to abandon ship?
My understanding of what he was doing was they were pulling out of certain markets because they felt like they had they were winning by such a large margin in those markets, which is, like, the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If you're trying, for instance, to play in the state of Pennsylvania, we're already doing well in the southwest part, so we'll now move to the southeast.
Well, they really are owning this media cycle.
Right. He's on the media cycle now for 2 consecutive weeks.
Yeah. Right, and as you say, whenever the attention is on Trump, it's bad news. Whenever the attention is on Clinton, it's bad news
for her, and he's been dominating for 2 weeks, so we know where he's at. But, you know, the idea is you want to run up the margin as much as you can in certain areas, and he just seems to – nothing of that campaign makes any sense to me. I don't understand it, which may be why we had such a hard time predicting the primary.
But there is reasoning behind why they think this, right? They think that their supporters are, like – die hard enough, sticky enough, and, like, they want to turn out people who are unlikely. Like, I was just in Berks County, Pennsylvania, and they were like, yep, we're knocking on weak voters' doors. Like, that's where we're pouring our attention, all of our resources into.
We should, of course, point out that there is no proof at all that Donald Trump turned out unusual voters in the primary. or that he's doing so in the general election. There is no proof of that. So they can say whatever they want
to say. Right, that's their working theory.
They could have a working theory. I mean, Lamarck also had a working theory. It turned out to be wrong. So, I mean, you know.
And everyone, and Republican strategists are also really worried about that because someone might be a weak undecided, you know, a weak voter, and they'll vote for Trump on the top of the ticket, but then they might screw up the Republican Party on the down ballot.
A friend of mine pointed out to me that throughout the primaries, even the states that he won, Trump did very badly among late deciding voters. And that can be a sign of a lack of a ground organization, where you don't pull those marginal voters to the polls. You don't particularly have a good closing argument also. It's hard to separate those two things. You're either with Trumpism or not. But, yeah.
So, Nate, final question, and then we've got to move on. But are there how many cycles of Democrats feel like Trump's done, then it tightens, Democrats freak out, then Democrats get complacent again, and Democrats freak out? How many cycles of those do we have left in the next 30 days?
I mean, the whole question is there something to that? I mean, historically, it's been kind of this sine wave pattern that we've talked about. But people are also very good at taking essentially random data sequences and imputing patterns to them, right? I mean, all these shifts have been caused by news. This is a big fight we get into on Twitter, right? It's not some random
We.
I get it.
Yeah.
The royal we.
And people have done a good job, actually, the conventional wisdom, for better or worse, has done a good job of predicting that obviously stupid things that a candidate does will hurt them in the polls. Big debate victories or losses will hurt you in the polls. And so it's just hard for me to imagine how Donald Trump can turn this weekend into a success at the debate. I can imagine a case where Hillary really steps in something and that becomes a story. But I hope for God's sake we don't hear this like, you know, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up, right? Like, hear what Trump said on the tape, there isn't a good apology for it. And it's hard for me to think, I guess if he's like extremely apologetic, it's probably better for show, right? But, you know, unless it doesn't come up, that's going to be a very hard moment for him. And the fact that he's apparently, I thought it was spin. I thought, like, well, these people are finally clever enough to say my candidate isn't preparing for the debate. Apparently, that wasn't spin.
and we should say that, like, a lot of stuff happened in the last hour before we came on stage, but including a new round of WikiLeaks. There were some transcripts or kind of partial transcripts of an email dump that showed some of the remarks that Hillary Clinton had given at private banks. To my initial reading, there is some, you know, not ideal language. It would have, I think, really hurt her in the primary, where she kind of talks about there's like kind of outreach to the banking community about working together to find.
There was like global open. It was very Davos-y, right?
Right.
Like
exactly.
Global open borders and free flowing.
So
currency.
I mean, I imagine. Well, I don't imagine anything about Donald Trump at this point, but one might think that Donald Trump would find a way to bring that up at the debate. So there's a lot of new information in this run up, and so we'll leave it there and say that we're going to do, we're going to be live blogging the debate, and we're going to do a podcast wrapping it up late at night on Sunday night. But we have to move on. And up next, we're going to look at undecided voters, who they are, where they are, what gives with undecided voters. We'll do that in a minute. But first, a word from this week's sponsor. This week's 538 Elections podcast is brought to you by MeUndies. Picture a world where putting on a new pair of underwear isn't just fresh, but it means that you're stepping into a better day. Think about it. Underwear is the first thing you put on and the last thing you take off. Why would you settle for anything less than the best feeling underwear on the planet? MeUndies' sole focus, their singular goal in life, is producing the most comfortable underwear you've ever experienced. It's the softest underwear on the planet, and it really makes each day that much better. That much better being the difference between a day where you're not wearing comfortable underwear and a day where you're wearing comfortable underwear. It's that much better. For the price of two cocktails, MeUndies will deliver your new favorite pair of underwear right to your doorstep, and a better day is guaranteed. Try them on. If they aren't the most comfortable, best-feeling undies you've ever had, they'll refund you and let you keep your first pair for free. For a limited time, everyone listening to this gets 20% off their first order when you go to MeUndies.com/elections. With the MeUndies Better Day Guarantee, you have nothing to lose, so don't wait any longer. Go to MeUndies.com/elections right now for 20% off. That's MeUndies.com/elections. Okay. Thank you for bearing with me. Cool. Thanks.
By the way,
it's Mike.
Nothing. Top of the second.
Okay, yeah.
The Giants have a man on second base.
Okay, yeah. Let's take a pause. I assume everyone is checking the game, and that when something big happens, we'll just hear a little like buzz. So yeah, we're relying on you. Let's move on to our next segment. Something I've been wanting to do for a while, which is just a big explainer, kind of on the undecided. So you know, I feel like I hear this question every 4 years, and I'm starting to see it in my Twitter feed. People saying like, "How could anyone be undecided at this point? The candidates are so different." But they're there. We know they're there, and they're always there. So let's try and get a sense first of who they are this year and then compare that to other years. But first off, are there any undecided voters in the House? Anyone? Okay.
You can be like a Stein Clinton.
Right. Well, we'll get
or
to
a
this.
Johnson Clinton undecided.
I know they're Jill Stein.
So to that end, Harry, let's try and first categorize the different kinds of undecided voters. So when we talk about people who are not voting for Trump or Clinton, that means there are people who are on the fence between the two of them, people who say they're voting for a third party and then may switch to one of them, people who are, I guess, deciding whether to vote at all. Are those basically the categories?
And the people who are simply just undecided. Yeah.
And the people who are just simply, yeah.
Could undecided. Vote for Stein or Johnson or Clinton
right.
or Trump.
Right. So
or
I guess one question is, should we think of third-party voters, voters who are considering Stein or Johnson, as undecided in this way? Is it fair to group them in as undecided voters?
I don't know if it's fair to say that they're undecided, but I will say we know traditionally third-party candidates lose steam the closer we get to the election. We know that Johnson's percentage of the vote in our 538 average has been shrinking over the last month or so. So I would say it's fair to include them in sort of that third-party undecided block that could potentially go towards either Clinton or Trump. I think that's perfectly fair. But they're obviously, look, Gary Johnson's going to do better than the 0.99% of the vote he got last time around. I don't think there's any
doubt. Yeah, there's an obvious
that.
Protest vote. And I think a third-party voter, a Libertarian or a Green Party candidate, would say, listen, like, you guys are sort of belittling our act of protest in this election, which is we know, like, they know they're not going to win, and it's a conscious choice. And
right.
I think,
but in terms of
statistically, I mean, you can't really.
Right. In terms of projecting the election, right? For all intents and purposes, we should consider them undecided because we expect them to.
I don't know if we'd consider them undecided. They add to the uncertainty, which is a big term that we have used so far. There's more uncertainty in this election than perhaps there was. Right. 4 years ago.
And you wrote recently about this, and on the screen behind us is a chart that shows kind of that a lot of third-party voters are, I guess, well, explain this to us. It shows that a lot of third-party voters are starting to break in one direction.
Right. So basically what this says, this is a chart that projects out from the national polls the Clinton plus Trump percentage of the vote. So the higher that goes, the more voters are deciding between those two candidates. And what we see is that at this point we've reached sort of the all-time high of people who are saying that they're going to vote for either Clinton or Trump, which is actually good news in terms of certainty. We are able to be somewhat more certain with if the margin is, say, 5 points, but Clinton's at 40 and Trump's at 35, you're less certain than, say, if it's a 5-point lead for Hillary Clinton and Clinton's at 45 and Trump's at 40. There are fewer ways that she could lose that lead.
Nate, can you put some numbers to this? I mean, how many undecideds are there out there? And how big of a factor does it continue to be, even though we see this trend behind us?
I mean, you know, we have 16% in the undecided slash third-party bucket. So what is it? It's like 7% Johnson, 2% Stein, and the rest are true undecideds. But that is a blurry distinction, to be sure. Because remember, these candidates were on the ballot in 2012. I don't have Harry's memory for the exact precise decimal place that Johnson got, but it was about 1% or 2% combined. It's not as though either of them have really taken the opportunity to run a tremendously good campaign.
That's an understatement.
It's a remarkable way to phrase it. Yes.
Being polite, right?
Yes.
The VP of the Libertarian ticket is basically on his way toward endorsing Hillary or at least announcing Trump. So I don't know, you know, but, you know, the fact is that people, I always say this like every time I chance I have, but Trump still only has about 40% of the vote. Does he have any idea how to get above 40%? I don't know, really, right? But, like, these last 24 hours are not going to help him, I don't
But it
think.
Was, like, 18% undecided, what, like, 10 days ago, right? So when Election Day hits, how many people do you think?
Well, the other question is, how many of those undecideds won't vote? Right. You have, I mean, these are not people who would say, man, I have two wonderful choices. I can't wait to decide. About 20% of the country dislikes both candidates, and that's an unprecedented number. You can find that in Senate elections like Harry Reid's election, whatever else, but, you know, the Clinton campaign is saying, oh, we're going to have a big turnout, maybe, but if you look at voter enthusiasm, it's quite a bit down, and, you know, people who hate both their choices might wind up not voting.
So, Claire, what is keeping people on the fence at this point?
There's unlikable candidates, and I think people just have... I think it's also become a fallback for people to be able to say, well, I don't like either of them. I mean, that's what everyone says. Like, that's the... You talk to anyone who's a voter, and even if they're a Democrat voting Clinton, they'll say, I mean, I don't like her. It's almost like it's become like a thing that you have to say because everyone's been saying it on the news.
Right.
And so I think that there's also a bit of, I don't know, there's an environment that's feeding it. It's like the perfect environment to grow this yeast of indecision in the country. And we're all kind of like, yeah.
I mean, I do hear from female friends of mine about how they're like, well, I actually really like Hillary, and I feel like I can't talk about that in mixed company. So maybe there's a shy Clinton vote.
We get the emails about the shy Trump vote all the time. Yeah. And I think, I agree, I think the shy Clinton vote is a really interesting phenomenon, Harry.
To me, there have been how many stories? Oh, these are the Trump voters. They feel so down. They feel left out. Like 4,000 different stories, half of them coming from a certain writer from Southwest Pennsylvania about the Trump voter. Where are the stories about the Hillary Clinton voter? She's getting more voters than he is. This is insane.
So to that end, that's, by the way, three Harry applause lines to zero, to zero, to zero. four. God damn it. Oh, no, that's me.
That's you.
All right.
You win.
I'll take it. This is the kind of adroit scorekeeping that's going to come into play very soon. Okay, but to that end, there is like a turnout element here. There's recreating the Obama coalition challenge for Clinton here. And when we think of undecideds, we do need to think about people who are potentially just disgusted and going to stay home or not sort of be mobilized in the way that Obama mobilized sort of coalition voters in 2008 and 2012. So what is the state of that, and what indication do we have that Clinton is starting or able to recreate that?
I think, you know, we are getting some clues from, you know, I am not a believer necessarily that early voting tells us all that much. But what we do know, early voting gives us an idea of how good the mobilization is of a campaign. How well are they getting out the vote? How well are they pushing their voters to get to the polls? And we know in the state of North Carolina that those numbers look pretty gosh darn good for the Democrats so far. I mean, the people, I think there was one tweet, a number from my dear friend, the summer me, Nathaniel Cohn, or Nathan Cohn, I think. Nate, obviously. I always like to get the full name, but I'm not quite sure what his full first name is.
The point
is, yes, I am verbose so much. The point is that Clinton is down by only about, modeled to be down only by a point among early voters in the state of North Carolina, early absentee voters.
Absentee, not early
voters. Right, absentee voters in the state of North Carolina. Mitt Romney, among those same voters, the people who voted early in 2012, was up by a much more significant margin. So there are some signs that Hillary Clinton is doing very well at getting out that vote. But the rest of it, we don't necessarily know so far. It's still early days yet.
It's more that the GOP vote is down and the Democratic vote is up.
I mean, they're pulling out, like, they're using all their star surrogates for all the early voting deadlines. So, like, Bill Clinton's going to Wisconsin. They had Michelle Obama in North Carolina. Like, they're putting everyone who sort of will draw a crowd to these early voting events.
When I'm starting to see numbers being cited, mostly from Democrats, about early voting turnout and even, like, split of, you know, Latinos versus black voters in early voting. And, like, where do those numbers come from?
I mean, some states, particularly southern states that have problems with representation in the Voting Rights Act, actually report how many people of each race and each party are registered. So you can see in Florida, for example, it's something like over the last month, 6 out of 7 new registrants are Democrats or something really lopsided like that.
Who tend to be undecided voters or third-party voters? Are they like the same people every cycle? Are they in the same states every time?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, sometimes someone gets a real tickle for a certain candidate for some reason. It's these true independents, right in the middle of the spectrum. You know, people talk about, oh, the independent vote. Most independents lean either towards the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. But if you look at those true independent voters who don't lean either way, they have tended to line up very well with the national vote the past few elections. They are the most likely to change their mind. These are people who tend not to watch that much news, tend to tune in very late to the campaign. These are the voters who tend to be the ones who are the most undecided.
HSN shoppers.
I was watching HSN the other day. High-quality programming. I was thinking of buying something.
Is that right? Okay, we're going to move on. But first, a word from this week's other sponsor. This week's 538 Elections podcast is also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100 or more job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. Right now, listeners to our show can post a job at ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/538. That's ZipRecruiter.com/538. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/538. All right, here we go. Nate, a little surprise. A little piece of audio for Nate. So, Galen, go ahead on.
Now, there's four different pants. Before there was one other one.
Nate Silver.
Well, Nate Silver has been, you know, he didn't predict us in the primary, and he had never called a loser before. I mean, you know, he's always been on the right side of what happened in terms of at least his predictions. And he didn't predict me in the primaries. And in all fairness, you know, he's never seen me, never spoke to me, never said what we did. You know, we had 17 very talented people. And one by one by one, it was a beautiful sight to watch.
So Trump is on the podcast?
So that was last night. Seems like forever ago. I first learned about this on Twitter, and people said, oh, Donald Trump just took a shot at Nate Silver by name. That actually didn't feel like much of
that
a
was
shot.
Pretty, no, that's that was like nice, grudging nice. Respectum.
Yeah, yeah, almost. Almost.
The same that I have for you.
Yeah.
But look, we still have, I think, maybe not with the latest update, but we have actually had, because it's the most cautious model, the model that gives Trump the best chance. So he should go after Sam Wang, PhD, or something instead.
It is worth noting that, like, Donald Trump thinks that if he met you, somehow the polling numbers would be different.
Yeah.
How would a visit to Mar-a-Lago factor into the model?
You know,
is that in your model, Nate?
Worth 2 or 3 points, I think.
Yeah. And I will say that this is for real, you know, for both candidates. We have a standing invitation for both candidates to come and meet Nate Silver on the podcast, and they can take us up on that.
I wonder if they're not coming.
Yeah, in the next 30 days. Okay, you got any other reaction to that, or shall we mosey on along?
I mean, it's been weird because we've tried to be, it's actually not Trump mentioning us, but like whenever Democrats or Republicans are trying to raise money, they'll find various ways to cite 538. When it began to happen in 2014, we tried to like be outraged and police it, and it's kind of unpoliceable. I mean, it's free speech. But, you know, that was relatively nice of Trump, I think.
Nice guy.
We'll take it. All right, that brings it to the end of the show. Nate Silver, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Claire Malone.
Thanks, Jody.
And Harry Enten, thank you for joining us, as always.
Thank you.
My name is Jody Avergan. Galen Druk is our producer. Wave back there to Galen. Micah Cohen is 538's Didn't Have Enough Miles to Fly to Chicago politics editor. A shout-out to 538's Chadwick Matlin, getting married this weekend.
Congrats.
Congratulations to you and Martha. Thanks to everyone who helped make this show possible. Naamka, Maureen, Vanessa, and Olivia from ESPN. Thanks to everyone at the Athenaeum Theater who helped put this together. Alan, Jeff, Beth, Jerry, Michael, Chris, Megan, Connor, Andy, Rusins, Devin, and Burgundy. Special shout out to Josh from Billions, who has been very helpful in all these live shows. Remember, we are live blogging during the debate, and our next podcast will be a live wrap-up podcast on Sunday night, so join us starting at 8 and stick around for that. In the meantime, keep sending us questions and comments about the show. You can tweet at us, of course, or email podcasts@538.com. Leave us ratings and reviews in iTunes. It really does help others discover the show. And last but not least, thanks to everyone who joined us tonight in Chicago. You've been great. We love you. It was really fun to come out here and chat with you. And thanks to everyone listening at home. We'll see you soon.